Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locker Room Access post-game show with Dougie Fresh and Coach Phony Bennett. We also have a special guest joining us, Danny Neckel. Thanks so much for coming on, Danny.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Real pleasure. Up, Dougie, once again, right on point. You called the score of the game. What are you now, 7-for-7?
7-for-7. I lead the probably the country at this point. Danny can check that out against the statistics.
That's right.
7-for-7. I think I said 62-48 or 60-48. I forgot. TW will correct me, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Right
and
there.
What did you do for the first half? How many points? Did you say 24 or 27?
I think I said for them or for us?
For them. I think you said 25, which is what they had, actually.
I thought I said 28. You know, I said 28. TW said 24. You said 27. Something like that.
Coach, I love the sweatshirt, by the way.
Thank you, man. Thank you. This was, you know, and I mentioned this on Twitter the other day. TW sustains me through all of these basketball delays because every now and then I open my door and there's a care package from you guys. And this was in it. I don't believe it's on sale yet in Navy, but it's an awesome sweatshirt. And here's the thing I discovered the other day. Inside the pocket, there is another pocket that Velcro's closed that can, like, fit your phone or something. And I was amazed to find a pocket inside a pocket. And I looked inside. There was not another pocket inside that one. I was hoping it was just, like, several layers of pockets and I could fit smaller and smaller things. Like, this is great. it's a comfy sweatshirt and the pack line was working today. This was a really nice performance.
Absolutely. And you said earlier at halftime you weren't worried about the second half.
I wasn't. Never worried. They put it together. It was like Gardner Webb. Remember, we went into that halftime down, but we were, things were clicking and you knew, like, okay, they got
it. Just felt my heart start beating fast when you said Gardner Webb before the moment.
Yeah.
Coach, also, I want to talk about your boy. Are we concerned what happened with him? No second half. I don't think he got in the second half.
I think he was in there for maybe a couple minutes. I'd have to check that out. Because there was one defensive possession that he had that I thought was worth mentioning. But yeah, I mean, the lineups were a little bit different that second half, but I think, again, this is about learning what lineups work against what teams. And obviously Boston College presented its own unique challenges today with their defense. And I thought there was, I was more happy with the lineups in the second half than I was in the first. Let's just say
that. Well, clearly he would decide not to go to the bench as early in the second half. And you sometimes, Dougie, when you played under JJ, under Jeff Jones, yep. What was the subbing pattern like? Did he go to the bench in the beginning of the season in the first half? Did he play his 6-7 guys and that was it?
By my last year, I was a 6-man. So I always said the problem with that coming off the bench is somebody else has a chance to play, so you won't get in. So, but I would say right around the first TV timeout, which is what, 4 minutes in?
Yep.
I felt like we started moving around then. And we had a lot of guards like they do now, so we could do some different situations.
Yep.
Yeah,
when you look at this first half today, he got TB decided to put in some subs early on.
Right. We rarely had the mat like three in, three out type thing though, in terms of subs.
Correct.
There was always a piece here, a piece there. So
correct. Right. We saw a couple of guys play today, or at least one guy, Casey McCorkle,
yep.
Get in Carson. And I don't think he had played yet where there were minutes that were where the game was close in the first half.
I didn't realize he's a walk-on.
Yeah, exactly.
Carson.
Yeah, bad announcing.
Yeah, the announcer called him a walk-on, Mark. Me and TW are laughing.
I didn't hear that. Danny, such a pleasure having you.
Thanks.
And you are known for your Twitter and for your stats.
Correct. Right?
How did that all come about?
It was just, I've always had a passion for stats. And, you know, I taught myself how to use Excel to figure out fantasy football lineups, to do probabilities for March Madness. And then so I just, once UVA started getting good, and so I wrote a blog a while back, didn't really get any hits, nobody read it. It was a lot of Cleveland stuff. But then I started tweeting about UVA basketball, and obviously once I started getting good in 2014, 2015, I just kept up writing stats, and this just took off from there. And so it's just a fun hobby to have. My personal career is political media buying, which has nothing to do with UVA basketball or anything. It has stats, but I would just apply both to to UVA basketball, and it just got, you know, just fun thing to do, to keep up with the team. I was going to try to apply it to football as well and other teams, other UVA sports as well. It's just basketball has more data sources like KenPom and better. It's easier to.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
KenPom on our site.
Oh, and then, you know, Bart Tarverick, and there's a lot more resources to use in basketball or than football or lacrosse or baseball. And obviously the fan base is a little more engaged as compared to those other sports and other sports I follow. Like I tweet about Cleveland Browns, but no one cares compared to when I tweet about
process for coming up with some of this stuff. I mean, are you looking, are you, cause you tend to present some like really specific stats, like of these guys that did this and this many games, like how do you filter through the data? Like, do you have something that makes things pop out to you, or do you say, let's just dig into this?
It depends. Sometimes I just look at the box score, like looking at it right now. I mean, Huff's 18-8-5, that seems pretty rare. So the main resource I use is Basketball Reference. And they have a new like paywall version, like called Stathead. And maybe not for college basketball for that one, but if you just plug in some of the numbers and you can pops out like who's the most recent person to do that stat line, or most recent UVA person, or how many times they've done that. And if nothing shows up, if it's, oh, we did that last week against Kent State or whatever, I'm like, that's not a good stat, I'll skip it. But if it's something rare,
No, you're good. He's just sharing.
Oh, sorry. I was like,
Oh yeah, I like these. I saw
that's
these.
Our producer T Dubs. He's on it.
Yeah. So if it's something rare, you know, I'll tweet it out. I'll start digging. it just depends on how I could tweet. You know, which is try to find more rare stuff too. Like if he had made another point, Huff today have been his career high, and that would have been Twitter. It would have been all over the place. Like that's not as fun as finding. Last time somebody's done something.
Dan, you're a big Cleveland guy. You're a Browns guy.
Yep.
All right, so. I'm gonna test you real quick. The only thing I know about the Browns, the last quarterback before Baker Mayfield to start in a Cleveland Browns playoff game,
Kelly Holcomb.
Boom, from Fayetteville, Tennessee.
Who was that? Kelly Holcomb. He filled in for Tim Couch, who was injured that year.
Yeah, we grew up together. He's 2 years younger than me, Fayetteville, Tennessee. Yeah, so. And by the way, that game, he threw for the most playoff, I think, passing yard, the second most in the history of the playoffs. Like, and he just ran out of time. Okay, you know, I'm not challenging.
Yeah, I fully remember the last time they're in playoffs. So.
So you beat me to that question. Thanks, Coach, for asking that. So what kind of tweets, how many tweets would you come up with after today's game?
Considering it's still 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the rest of the day, I don't know, 5, 10 tweets. But if the game ended at 11 o'clock, nobody's going to pay attention at 1 o'clock in the morning. But
the UVA game itself.
What was that?
From the UVA game, you would come up with how
many?
Five, 10?
I mean, it's good to get some good stats, maybe like 5 tweets. It might. I mean, just however I feel, you know, if there's anything that pops out. And then, you know, I could actually, UVA was 3-0 in the ACC. So I'm going to go back and look up. Well, I think it's 4 years in a row. I've been 3-0 in the ACC. So I'm going to compare that to any other ACC teams, any other power, you know, major conference teams. You know, I'll tweet something out like that. So it's just whatever pops in my head, whatever stands out in the box score or any trends. But there's no, it's just more of like comparing what has been done recently, what's done in the past. If it's like Virginia history and ACC history, something crazy for this year or for past years. Just trying to find stuff that pops. Mm-hmm.
Were you an athlete growing up?
Yeah, an athlete. Yeah, I mean, I played basketball. I played lacrosse. But, I mean, I wasn't, like, varsity or anything like that. Obviously, I'm 6'6", so everyone thinks I played basketball. My high school was really good, Hayfield High School in Alexandria. My senior year, we were, like, undefeated. Like, we had one loss going into the state semifinals. We lost to some punk white kid who could shoot a three-pointer for Duke. JJ Redick. Huh. So yeah, my senior year we lost. I mean, that I was on the front row of the game. He's nailing threes, doing this. I'm like, oh, that's great. And then he goes and does it for 4 more years at UVA or against UVA at Duke. So
six eight with the fro, by the way.
Yeah. So I know it's a little spiky here, but
I'm just jealous. These guys know.
No need to be Dougie. Good looking dude. All right. So, Danny, what are the most outrageous tweets? Do you ever tweet like controversial stuff, or is it just basic stats?
I try when I do stray from stats is when I get in trouble. So like when I find stats against Gonzaga, like I'm not a big fan of them, and I get rightfully yelled at for that. And so
give me an example. Give me an example.
Oh, like saying that they're only going to have four, top 50 wins this year, or four top 50 games this year. And like, does that mean they're going to be terrible? No, but you're going to look at Gonzaga and, or you look at Kansas and Baylor are going to have like 20 top 50 wins or games.
I wouldn't tweet about Gonzaga this year, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, vis-a-vis this UVA, was at the beginning of the season, before we even had on the schedule, before we lost. Yeah, so yeah, I'm kind of zipped up on that now. Yeah. I try to stray from anything negative. Any like controversial tweets. I mean, just like when Keyhart Clark, when Kihei was struggling, beginning of last year or beginning of his freshman year, when Ty was injured, he's a lot of turnover. So I mentioned that and everyone got upset. It's like, so I was just trying to keep positive, especially around the specific UVA players. Right. Trying to think of any controversial takes.
So when you make those,
another controversial take is like Mariel Shayok and other players who transferred out, whether they're considered friends of the program or who's in the NBA type things. Like we consider them, like, yes, they played, but they graduated from Iowa State type things. Like does the NBA consider them former Hoos, or like just, controversial takes like that and try.
All right. I mean, that's not that.
No, that's just facts,
which I'm glad about. So when you tweet something or you send out a tweet about Gonzaga, what are the responses? And do you get responses from Gonzaga people and UVA people, or is it mostly just UVA people?
Both. Some UVA people are like, no, nah, not this again. Or like, especially before, before we scheduled them, after we've got crushed by them, it's just like, ugh, you don't need to say this anymore. And then also Gonzaga people were like, oh, the same, same old UVA, Gonzaga doesn't have the schedule, people coming out, like, what do we have to do to prove it? And you made the title and all that. And so just got me in trouble a little bit, but.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, please stick around as we continue to discuss the third ACC win of the season. Dougie, defensively, what'd you think?
I thought I was critical in the first half. I thought we could have been better around the rim a few times, although a few times we were good around the rim. I liked Reese's, the way he moved his feet today, not letting guys turn the corner on him. I really thought Kihei was a leader. He took the charge, which I'm not a big guy in terms of taking charges. If somebody knocks me down, I go down. But, he took that charge, was key. I think it's gelling. How's that? This is my biggest takeaway for our defense is I think the guys are gelling. Saw a couple guys, missed assignment, and then but another guy, Trey, I saw somebody miss an assignment. He tried to cover up for him, didn't work. But I think they're starting to understand how to cheat in the pack line, meaning be in the wrong position, right position, and cover up for your teammates. So,
yep. All right, Coach. Offensively. Thoughts on, I thought Sam Hauser just looked like the best player on the court today. He looked good.
So smooth.
In every shot, but he just looked dominant.
Right. He really
got the player of the game from the ACC network, and he had a really good game.
Right.
But Sam just looked like he was just all over the place.
Sam, I think,
offensively and defensively.
Yeah. I think Sam was only 2 points off from what Jay had. And I mean, he showcased the full arsenal. He had some nice post moves. He had the threes. He looked all around good. And I want to highlight Beekman because, Fresh, you were talking about Beekman. He had a play early in the second half where he drove the basket, and he could have really settled for a very difficult shot because the defense was there. And instead, he showed some patience, some maturity, and drew the foul. And he was trying to draw the foul. He put himself in a position where the shot was basically impossible.
Yeah.
That's the kind of advanced game that we've heard about from him, and that I think we're going to continue to see. And that's one of the things that makes him special.
How many turnovers do you have on the year now?
Be huge.
Very low, right?
He has zero today. Well, let's ask Danny.
Yeah, I'm gonna say we got the guy here who can tell us.
Basketballreference.com.
I know he Beekman Reese was 4 for 4 from the free throw line today, 0 turnovers, scored 4 points, I believe, on 0 for 4 shooting. Sometimes that's how what happens. Okay. I thought he was aggressive offensively, had some really good attacks, sees the court really well, defensively, just strong. His man doesn't beat him to the basket very often.
Yeah. No, he really showed he just has a maturity to his game. And on defense, he's really proven that he deserves to be out there as well. And for my money right now, Beekman and Murphy are the two guys that their development, their continued success and improvement are going to be the keys to the season. We know what Jay and Sam are capable of and what they're going to need to bring for us to be successful. So those two are the next two guys. And if they can bring it, the ceiling is really high.
Yep. Trey looked great. Good first half. Yep. I don't think he scored in the second half, but I still like his shot selection. I still like his attacks. I still like how he's moving his feet on defense. Danny, you got that number for us?
Yeah, so for free throws, he was 3 for 6 coming into the game, Beekman was, and he had 8 turnovers on the season.
For the season so far.
Yeah, he didn't have any in his first 3 games, but he had right, 3.
That's what I remember.
So in 9 games, he has 8 turnovers.
You know what? I thought that this wasn't my question, but Kihei today, I think this is one of the best overall floor games I've seen him play. I don't know if he had to, I'm sure he had a turnover too, because that's part of the game when you're a point guard. Yeah. But his angle, he was getting himself the angles to Jay. You know, he made the great lob, which is a great play. But he was getting to the angles, maintaining his dribble when he would overdrive, which is not an overdrive if you maintain your dribble.
Right. Absolutely.
And making great decisions. I thought it was one of his best floor games as a floor
game. I thought it was everything that we ask that you want Kihei to do without trying to do too much. Yep. Yeah. I think that's the problem. And that's when people start complaining, is when he tries to do more than what he needs to do. Like, look at these other four guys on the court, and he worked so well today as a facilitator and calling his own number at the right moments.
Yep.
Yeah. He understands when to go and when to attack and when to pass, and he's doing such a good job of just his awareness is so strong. Coach, by the way, I'm happy to see you. Well, it doesn't really matter to me, drinking out of a cup instead of a bottle today with the Virginia. That's really most important with the Virginia
bottle
logo.
I was drinking from last time, just for anyone who didn't tune in last week, was a tea bottle, and it was unsweet tea. I did not have it.
Well, I forgot about that thing. That's right.
All right, Dougie, you notice things very often that aren't necessarily on the court.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm going to point something out to you. You may or may not know, have noticed, which okay. I think you probably did. On the bench, Chase Coleman being such a big rah-rah cheerleader guy.
Yeah.
How important is that to the team?
It's a huge deal, man. You got to make your own energy. I've always said, even if you're at an away game and they have the home court event, you love it. You love the fans going crazy. You feed off of it both ways, right? Shut them up. And so I think it's a huge deal. I think somebody even came out and said he was the MVP in our last game. Chase, I read that somewhere. It's an enormous deal, and hopefully it rubs off on the rest of the guys over there, because you gotta be loud and vocal, and your voice is gonna be heard. It's not like you're in Cameron yelling out instruction or, you know, good job or whatever, and nobody hears you.
Right.
So you can make a difference, man.
And that's not always so easy. You're sitting on the bench, you know you're not gonna play.
Right.
Right. And you're on a team so that you can play, and his role is to cheer his teammates on. Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a testament to a Virginia guy, I guess, and a testament to him, I should say, more so, that he's willing to do that. Right. So
selfless quality that.
And I guarantee you that goes into practice too. I guarantee you he's playing as hard as anybody in practice, defense, offense, whatever it may be.
Well, he's a preferred walk-on, right?
Yeah, he's a real player.
Whose brother is Matt Coleman, one of the top point guards in college basketball at Texas.
Well, that's my understanding about Chase is that this is a kid that wants to be a coach, and that is, you know, chose this program, you know, with that in mind.
Yeah, it looked like he was jumping on the court as if he were a coach today.
Right. Yeah, I've heard a lot of things about. I mean, that he's analyzing stuff, and yeah, he's a neat player to have on the bench.
Really, really nice kid. Really nice kid.
He has a great alley oop off the backboard play too, which I like a lot.
Let's not talk about that. It's going to live down in infamy for that one. Danny, do you analyze the game as well, or do you look for more different stats?
I'm more like, you know, after the game's over type stats, looking at trends and stuff like that. I'm not a former coach. I'm not as into like the blocker mover and all the, you know, intricacies of the game. That's above my pay grade. I don't have as much experience with that. More just historical trends and data.
Yep.
I'm looking at Huff's stat line. No UVA player has done that since at least 2011. He was close in that Duke game where he almost had a triple double, but he only had 15 points in that Duke game. So he had, so that his line of 18 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 blocks. No UVA player has done that since at least 2011. So I'm assuming Samson done that many times, but can't die.
Yeah. Yep. Looks like another double double.
Didn't he have 5 blocks in the first half?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. 5 blocks in the first half. Another double double for Sam Hauser.
Sam looks so smooth today, man. His jumper looks so wet and just comfortable and smooth.
He's so good in the post.
A little fadeaway hit. I didn't even touch the net when it goes in.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a favorite type of tweet? I don't know if that's a real question or not. I don't know how to phrase it when it comes to social media. Is there something that you particularly look for, like whether it's offense or defense or wins or losses?
More just like rarity, like using like there's like 1,000 players have played 50 minutes, you know, so far this year, and Jay Huff's the only one with, you know, X, Y, and Z or something. Something that shows the enormity of how many people are playing, or that hasn't been done in 20 years, hasn't been done in 30 years, or in the history of whatever. That type of stuff is more exciting. The market's more like, whoa, that's crazy type of hits.
Right. Do you prefer the college game or the NBA game? And how much do you follow the Hoos who are in the NBA?
I'd say college I follow more, just because my team's all right. Obviously UVA is really good, but I mean, I'm a little from Cleveland. I was obviously a big Cavaliers LeBron fan, so I went to the parade after they won. I mean, I grew up watching NBA in Cleveland. So, but as far as what I follow, who's in the NBA? Yeah, definitely Joe Harris, especially when he was on Cleveland. Brogdon and DeAndre Hunter. So I've been tweeting a lot recently because they're on fire right now. So they're averaging 15 points a game right now, which is amazing since Samson's the only other person to do that for UVA alumni. And then obviously once more players are playing this year than ever before with Anthony Gill getting contract, Ty obviously hasn't played yet, but then Kyle, Mike Scott. Once they all get back on the court, then you could have like what 10 players in the NBA right now. And so that'd be fun stats to compare.
I want to say it's 8. That could be wrong, but I think that's the number. But so going back to a similar question Coach asked you earlier, how do you follow? Is there a site you follow that you plug in at night or the next morning to see how the stats were of those UVA coups?
The NBA.com actually is a good one for their, because they do live stats, like maybe 10 minutes after the game's over, it's already updated. So they're pretty good for NBA stats. As for college stats, sportsreference.com and team rankings, they have some good information. For football, CFB stats. The NCAA has some decent historical stats, because they can just pull up like a team sheet. That shows you like, oh, this person's 10th in the nation in this, they're 100th in the nation in that. That kind of sites are good. Ken Palm and Bart Tarvik have also live stats for college basketball, but sometimes they don't have the sortable functions that sports reference does. They're more for like ranking, comparing teams.
All right. Coach and Dougie, Wednesday, home against Notre Dame at 2:30. Yep. What's the first thing that comes to your mind Wednesday 2:30 game?
I hate COVID. I mean, I get it. Like, you're trying to eliminate an overnight stay or something. On one end or the other, they're trying to simplify travel and reduce exposure, and that's all fine. As a fan, though, that sucks because, you know, most of us are going to be at work that day. Maybe we'll be able to tune in. Maybe we won't. Yeah, I'm sure I'll DVR and be able to watch it again that night, but the thrill of watching live sports is seriously impacted. I mean, obviously we can't go to games right now, but it would be nice if you could watch it on the TV instead of a little screen in the corner of my monitor at work, but we'll see. Other than that, I like the turnaround. I mean, we just played them last game? There's going to be some familiarity there. I liked us better than them the first time. So unless they figure a lot of stuff out, and then Bray's a great coach, and you know, I'm sure they're going to throw in some wrinkles that we're hopefully expecting, like hopefully anticipating. But it should be a good game. I'm bummed to have to watch it at 2:30 in the afternoon on a Wednesday, though.
Dougie?
Yeah, I don't mind 2:30. Hopefully I can be on with you guys.
Still at lunch at 2:30.
I was just gonna say, Dougie, save your lunch 2 hour break for 2:30.
It doesn't work like that, Mark. I'll take the day off maybe. It's better than 10 p.m. though. It's better than 10 p.m. or 9 p.m. in my opinion. So feels like an NCAA tournament game a little bit too. You know, it's different. It's not normal, but we all want to watch it. So
All right, Danny, when's the last time? Or how many years in a row that UVA started 4-0 in the ACC?
Well, in 2017, they were, so it started 4-0, okay.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No.
But this is kind of a test too, to see how long it takes.
Yeah, exactly.
They weren't 4-0 last year, so they were 3-0 last year. They lost to BC, make them 3-1. So,
all right. Prior to last year,
when was the last
time? How many prior to last year? How many consecutive years did UVA start 4-0? Do we know?
That many consecutive years?
Because 2017 they lost the second and third game. So 2018, 2019 are 4-0.
I'm sorry, I meant prior to 2017. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be not 2016.
I don't know how you would look
2015, they are starting 7-0. 2014, they lost that fourth game was a Duke game.
Right. So. Yeah.
How do you look that set up?
I'm just on Ken Palm. They have they're the quicker for the schedules.
Danny, we got to stop you.
Yes.
Mark's not a Ken Palm fan.
I'm gonna have to drop a special word now, Marky.
You have to balance it out, Dougie. All right, yeah, yeah. Boy Wonder, right on time. Thanks for coming.
I'm trying to find my last season and what we started, because we were 11-0 at one point.
Yeah,
I can't find the game.
Boy Wonder, what'd you think of the offense?
You know, I thought it looked good. There's a lot of zone still. They mixed in. BC mixed in some man, and we had a little bit of five out, a lot of ball screen stuff. So in the last 5 to 10 minutes for Kihei, and he was good there. And then, you know, Jay was dominant, and that's great to see. He was aggressive, or the florist was aggressive, and he made his deliveries. And so that's a key. And then Sam was wheeling and dealing, and you know, him putting up, what was it, 17 and 10. That's huge. And those two guys, when they're at their best, this team's at their best. And, you know, Kihei had some nice drives off ball screens, and, you know, they didn't shoot particularly well. I think it was like 27% from three, but
4 for 15.
Still pulled out a good win. They look good defensively. The ball screen defense is much better than it has been. I think not having Huff hedge out is a really good sort of adjustment that they've made. And, you know, I was overall very pleased. They only turned the ball over once or twice in the second half, which was great. And they were able to get back in transition and not give Boston College any easy looks.
Yep. I don't know, you know, if you have, can you go under the ball screen against a different team, right? We beat Notre Dame, which is a good thing. We beat Wake Forest. We beat Boston College. Those three teams are not going to win the ACC. I'm going to go on record and say that, right? They're not going to be in the top tier of the ACC right now. Right?
No.
So we beat those teams that we're supposed to beat. Now, can we sustain this level of play and this level of defense when the teams start getting tougher? Next Saturday, I believe, is Clemson, who's been playing fairly well. Can we sustain this level? Can we defend Clemson like we're defending these guys? And we still got to play Notre Dame. No game in the ACC is easy, especially on the road. Dougie, you can always attest to that. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Playing. Yep. No game for any conference on the road. Is an easy win.
There's no gimmies in the ACC.
No game, even at home, right? So again, I'm curious to know how we're going to continue to defend the pick and roll. Does it change? Does it change per game by game? I think have Dougie in his absence. Maybe you can answer this for have. Is he happy with a little bit of an adjustment on defense?
Oh, sure. I'm happy with it. I think have said the whole time, just make some tweaks when things aren't working. You can't just beat it to death and keep doing it. So what are they playing? The MIG? So they're not doing the high hedges to the 94 court, 94 foot line.
Yeah, they're
not doing the middle to kind of contain. So is that, am I right, Zach? Sorry, I might be.
I think, they've run some of the MIG. I think that they still mix it up a little bit. I need to go back and rewatch.
Can you guys explain what MIG is?
Shit, I got out of my comfort zone there.
Yeah, I think Jay Willie.
I'm going to get beat down by a 17-year-old right now. This is awesome.
Sorry, Fresh. So I think Jay Willie explained it well on his show on Monday, and he was saying MIG stands for most important guy. It's an NBA term. It's sort of when you have a ball screen, especially when you want to have a hard hedge, you have the guy that's two passes away, the defender who's two passes away on the backside, essentially come over into the middle of the paint to be that help defender who's going to tag the big who rolls to the hoop, essentially, so that the big, Huff in most scenarios doesn't have to be concerned with the guy rolling to the hoop, and he can just focus on the hedge and then getting back as fast as he can. It's just sort of a more clear cut rotation, just to sort of make it more obvious for the guys who are less experienced in the pack line. And then when they're not hedging as hard, they don't have to do that. They don't have to be aggressive off ball, because you sort of have Jay, still focusing on the ball handler, but he's more able to recover to the big than he would be if he was out, 94 feet hedge.
Well, I mean, that seemed to work defensively today, but what is the impact offensively for a guy like Jay Huff of not having to sprint out and hedge and recover, three or four times in a possession?
Absolutely. It just means that he's not running as far. There's just that basic, and there's not as much stress put on him defensively. But I do think that Mark's point about, this works against Boston College, Notre Dame, and Wake Forest. What happens when we start playing elite guards in the ACC? And, BC has some good guards. They don't have the most dangerous big guys, especially with their starter out. Jay not having to hedge out as hard is huge, especially, because he was dealing with that earlier in the year without someone like Amomadi or Braxton on the backside to clean things up for him. He had to be that much faster. Now that he doesn't have to do that as much, now that he doesn't have to stress out about, getting out to half court and then getting back in the paint, it's going to make his life a lot easier. And then he can just put more energy into the offensive end.
Danny, I got one more favor to ask. And I hope I didn't ask this earlier. I hope I didn't miss this. Jay Huff had his career high today, 18 points. What's his career high of attempted field goals?
All right, so it was tied his career high.
Career high is 18 points. I mean, as dominating as he's been some games, how is he? Does he not have a 26, 28 point game at the very?
His career high attempts was that Miami game. He had 16 attempts. That was end of last year. We had 17 and nobody else had any other points. I think it's confusing why people don't think because his second game ever, or his first game ever versus Austin Peay, his debut, he had 16 points, and his career high is only 2 points more than that. So everyone thinks he's got like a 25, 30 point game, but it's still today. And then Kent State a couple weeks ago, that was what he tied 18.
Right. I mean, he's never had tons of minutes.
So here's my question.
Well, I think he's getting more minutes, right, than ever before. But also, he doesn't get that many shots. It's not often that he's getting double-figure shots.
Yeah. That Miami game was 16. He's at 112 and 3 10s. So it's only five times in his career he's attempted 10 shots in a game.
That's Tony Bennett's offense for you. It's not a lot of touches for big guys. And it does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Today was his third highest most attempts.
Danny, were you able to get that stat out? Like the ACC, as the ACC got it out, as T Dubs is showing now?
Look at Chase. There you go.
I was going to get that, but I.
We held you too long. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I had seen that he was the only UVA player to do that. And he had only been, he's like, you're the 15th person this year to do that, but I wasn't narrowing it down to ACC yet.
Yep.
So I can go back.
Game for Jay, and we're hopefully, obviously, we hope that he continues with his aggressive nature, right? Because again, every time he's aggressive that I've ever watched, he's successful, right? And did he have any threes today? 2-0 for 1 from three.
Yeah, I think he was just 0 for 1. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's that was an ugly shot too. But
4 fouls in the second half for Jay.
And as
far as doing so well early, he didn't have any foul trouble until the end.
Right.
Yeah, some of those late ones, I don't know if he was playing a little bit more recklessly because he knew that he didn't have that many. He, you know, the game was getting short.
Well, reckless or at least be able to take some chances.
Right.
Right. And then, which allowed my man Big Poppy to get some extra, some burn.
Yep.
Right. I think 9 guys playing time. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that sounds right. If you bring in McCorkle, Kafara, Walter Tensley, and McCoy off the bench, and then your 5 starters. Yeah, but I think it was interesting. If you look at the numbers, I think there were only like 21 minutes off the bench. The starters average, I think I did the math, 36 minutes total. And that's more so a result of not having Casey, Caden, and then Cody as well. But I do think that Bennett is narrowing down his rotation a little bit. Obviously, when those guys come back, they'll get some more minutes, and that sort of 36 minutes per game for the starter will decrease. But you can tell that he knows the guys that he likes. I think he's set with this starting lineup, at least until Casey comes back, and then maybe Casey and Reese will switch at that 2-guard spot, depending on the matchups. But, you know, I do think that he's narrowing things down right now.
I agree. And as we talked about at halftime, when McCorkle got some burn, my feeling is, and my experience and understanding TB and watching some practices and watching some games and talking to some of the players, every practice is an audition. If you have a couple of good auditions and consecutive good auditions, you're going to get an opportunity. Right. So, all right, Danny, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Please come back, hang out with us.
No problem. It's fun.
Love the stats.
Thanks. I just tweeted out another one about a Hauser. So, he had his third straight double-double, and he's already top 5 at UVA for double-doubles in the past 10 years. Wow. And only 9 games, which is kind of crazy.
Is that surprising to you, Coach?
Yeah, it's surprising. I mean, because the past 10 years, you're talking about the Tony Bennett era, and part of it's pace-related. Obviously, people aren't going to get enough as many opportunities to get rebounds or points or whatever, but that still shows a special quality that Hauser brings. And look, we criticized his defense early in the season. We're still critical from play to play now, but I think his defense is improving and he's turning into someone that's just going to be crucial for this team down the stretch.
Much more aware of defense, moving his feet better, always been a tough rebounder, but he's going after the ball, not recklessly. He's going after the ball with just such toughness, and he's coming down with it off rebounds, offensively and defensively. I think
he had one possession today where he went 1 for 3 on that possession, but
exactly.
It's the
2 offensive rebounds. Right. Exactly.
It's
exactly.
Called padding your stats.
Right. Yeah, that contributed to that double-double.
Could have made the first.
Yep. All right. Any weaknesses, any areas of improvement? Zach, what do you think?
I think not letting up so many offensive rebounds. I think Boston College maybe had 12 on the day, and I think they had 9 in the first half, so they did better defensively on the defensive boards in the second half. But, yeah, I mean, that's an issue. If you're giving them 12 extra possessions per game, that's a recipe for disaster, especially in the ACC and on the road. Fortunately, Boston College is Boston College, and it wasn't a Clemson or a Louisville. But, you know, I think that that's something you have to look at. And hopefully Sam can help out there on the defensive end. You know, and you just need the bigs to be able to box out something and just, you know, get on their guy and get him out of the paint.
Every once in a while, I get an opportunity to correct you. Zach, it wasn't 12. It was 13.
Oof,
it was 1 off, which was great. Danny, are you saying goodbye to us, or were you
going to? You're saying
goodbye. Okay. I thought he was waving to the viewers.
Oh, no. I was just saying. Yeah.
Danny, how come?
This is fun.
How do people follow you, Danny? How do we find you on Twitter?
Oh, at dneckel19.com. So dnekel19.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Danny.
Great.
Thanks, man.
Coach, anything that's bothering you or that you're concerned about?
No, I mean, this was a game that obviously had some ups and downs, and there was a little trough in the middle that none of us were too happy with. But again, just like and you can say this about the Gonzaga game, this team is a better team at the end of the game than they were at the beginning of the game. And as we head into the meat of the ACC season, we haven't seen that yet. We haven't seen these good teams. And even though the ACC isn't great this year, there are still some top teams and we haven't met them yet. And I'm glad to see this team continue to improve because it gives me the confidence that when we do meet those better teams, starting really with Clemson, that we're going to be more ready for it and more prepared than we were when we say met Gonzaga.
Yep. Three teams, 3-0, Louisville, Duke, and UVA. Dougie, any concerns?
I think we give up too many layups, too much going to the rim. I think the announcer said they missed 9 today, BC. I'm not sure if that's right or not. I just feel like guys get by us a lot coming downhill and going toward the rim. I would like to clean that up.
Yep.
But no, we're building good, man. The chemistry was way better today, defensively, yeah, specifically. And that's just going to go.
I don't want to downplay the victory. And they just, in general, just look better, right? Because yeah, we've played teams like Kent State and San Francisco and St. Francis and some other teams and didn't put – well, St. Francis we put away, but not San Francisco, not Kent State. And I think – this, again, we all know this team, this type of style of defense and strategy takes time to learn. And also, Hav's point was always about not making adjustments. It seems like the coaching staff is starting to make adjustments, right? And, yep, and it looks like it's working out well. If defense was played like this early on, which can't always happen, especially in the beginning, no chance. I don't think San Francisco beats us, and I don't think the game against Kent State is so close.
No.
Guys coming together. Again, I just want to – you know, I always think about the level of competition. You beat Notre Dame, you're supposed to beat. Beat Wake Forest, you're supposed to beat. Beat BC, who you're supposed to beat. Should need to beat Notre Dame again, who you're supposed to beat. So you got to get all the teams that you're supposed to win, that you're supposed to beat, right? Get those victories. Seal those victories because the other ones are going to be tough games, right? Yep. And they can go either way. And they can come out of possession.
My biggest deal with watching the team overall and individuals is the fog is gone from their eyes, right? They're not looking at each other like, where was I supposed to be? Where were you supposed to be? Yep. You know, Sam a few times has interjected, telling some that was gone today. They all looked very sure in yep, through mistakes as well, right? I know what I did. I'm good. So that's absolutely changed slowly but surely.
Absolutely. All right. We're back on the air Wednesday at 2:00, right? Hopefully, Coach, you'll be able to join us.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening at work that day. But I got a second monitor just for us. So
all right. Boy Wonder, what time do you get out of school?
2:35 that day. So I think I'm not going to be able to be available for pregame, but you know, halftime and post.
Ask your teacher if you can go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Get a snack.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's virtual. So technically I could.
All right. I wouldn't say that on air.
Well, yeah, just put, turn your camera off.
I'm not saying I will.
Or put like some kind of shadow.
Or like a fake background. Like I'm
no,
just like,
put a, get a, like get a Junior Burrow cutout and just put it in your, right in your monitor. Like everybody else does.
Doug, you wouldn't have done that. No chance.
Oh, for school. In high school, I was a really good student. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't have. Oh, if it was virtual? Unclear. College, middle right school.
Doug, hopefully you'll be able to join us on Wednesday at 2:00.
Yeah, yeah. I'll figure it out.
All right, guys. Everyone, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much for joining the Locker Room Access post-game show. We will see you 2:00 on Wednesday.
Shout out, Don Lee. Abrams, right? Shout out to him.
Who's?
Okay. Who's?